Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, did you enjoy last night? Yeah, it's a bit brutal that we have to do this at 9 a.m. after gala dinner yesterday, but let's see how we can share some of the thoughts today. I'm very happy to be here, actually, and I've been thinking in the line of these thoughts for a while. It's really great honor to be able to share some of the thoughts with you, especially with the community of Eden. So my presentation, as you can see, the title is on the slide, but my presentation will be divided into three parts. So at the end of the day, I hope that we can kind of open up a little conversation. So the first part, I'm just going to talk about what it means by transformation. So the entire theme of the conference is digital transformation. And actually, do we really know what we want in terms of transforming? What do you want to transform? For whom and for what? So some of the conversations that will be meaningful to have it to begin with. And I'm going to move on to distance education. So I know we will have some heart for it. But what does that mean? What does distance mean and education mean? And is it okay for us to mix it up with all the new terms that we've been using together? Or is there something very special about distance education that we may want to think and hold it? And last part is purposive design. So, okay, we talk about transformation. We want to do something about it. And we have thought about the subject of our transformation, which is going to be distance education or through distance education, and what it means for us as practitioners or researchers in terms of what we do when it comes to our design and teaching and pedagogical practice we are engaged in. So at the end of those three parts, I want to argue, basically, so this is key point, I do believe that we may want to stay a little bit different from all our bits and try to really pursue the differences that we have been always trying to make. So that's kind of overview of my presentation. So I'll start from transformation. Transformation is it's a pretty loaded term. Everyone is talking about it at the moment. But if you look at the dictionary, actually, you will realize that it's pretty difficult to do. So as you can see, it's a complete change. It's not just a tiny little change. No, it's a complete makeover of some characteristics of something or someone, especially so that those changes will make something better. So there's three keywords here. So completeness and characteristics. And at the end of the day, it should be improvement, not just simple changes. And if you look at, the dictionary meaning, we just realized that how difficult it is in terms of what we were trying to do here. So underlying all this understanding that we do and we have in terms of transformation, there is this approach to human development. Some of us explicitly share and aware of it. Some of us may not be that much. But what we share in terms of our philosophy, actually we share this view, which I would call progressive view of history or human history. So what we kind of implicitly believe here is somehow technological development will lead to social development in hopefully a positive way. Also, those social development caused by technological development will initially or eventually lead to human liberation. So that's something that I just wanted to start off. So that's probably what we kind of believe or hope inside ourselves. And I just wanted to unpack that. What does that really mean? And even that's really what it is? So we've been having the history. Human history is like, even written history is more than 2,000 years. And all those years, we had our relationship among others, ourselves, and with nature, and we lived our life. But suddenly, we want to transform all those historical progress that we have made. So what was not really good about? I mean, is there something that really not good about how we have been? And suddenly now, we have digital technology, which is a lovely thing, maybe, but we wanted to change something. But what is really a problem that we have that we need to change is something we can't probably answer very clearly. It's true, digital technology, even not digital technology, even before digital technology, all the machine has helped us. So as you can see, through the help of machine, that we have produced more productive, our human productivity has been increased over the few hundred years. And it's getting even more and more, we're getting more efficient and productive. So machine has been developed a lot. And now we're at the stage that some of you may call it like post-human era, that even limitation of human body or limitation of human's physical ability has been transformed. With machine, actually we can do so much more than that we are supposed to be able to do for those history. And then now, it's not only physical, emotion. You can see little robots looking pretty kind. Even when it comes to education, actually the people believe that machine, the robot can be more emotionally connected to our children than teacher who are always tired, a little bit irritated easily because we are just human. So this is what we have for sure, which is technological promises or technological possibility. No one is going to argue. Of course, we have parts and bits and bits, but mainly we're well connected, especially to us who are here now. And then we can do everything like for 24 hours and 7 days and 365 days a year. And then socially as well, we are connected through all these apps. And we can say that no one is pretty isolated in one way. However, from here, I just want to show you different side of technological development, what it has done to us, to the humanity. So we are always connected, but our conversation and interaction is pretty much dictated by how technology has been designed. And all of us, many of us, probably share, it's really difficult to have quiet time to think and like deep thinking and reflecting on what's going on even within our daily life. Although we're supposed to interact with people with different views and then open up this democratic conversation, but as we know that, people get together with the people who are like exactly the same like them. So we're living in the kind of moment, although we're extremely connected, but our political divide across the society is worse than ever in our history. And also, are we using technology? How are you using technology? Is it always about something that we think idealistic or sometimes a lot of destruction going on? And Netflix is a lovely thing to have in our life, but we have to face that. The consequences sometimes it comes to some sort of addicted behavior, so on. So us, being always connected, interacted with each other in one form or the other, we trade. There's like long trail of our behaviors every day. So we know by voluntarily engaging with this digital activity, we create a lot of data, which is pretty exciting. As you know, that learning analytic is one thing, learner analytic the other thing. We have data that actually we can utilize to help learner. I don't want to be against with that idea. However, how? The algorithm behind data collection itself is not very accessible to many of us. I don't know, some of you may have better technology, but I absolutely do not have any idea how all these things happen. So without knowing the algorithm, who is going to get the benefit of all the data? I would say the education may be one of the last sectors in the society will get really benefit out of that. And we know who is actually making tons of money out of those data that we created voluntarily at the moment. A lot of issue in terms of the surveillance. So we're making that kind of data trails every day, and that has consequences. No one is so free from control in very broad sense. And also AI, many of us are excited about it. However, if machine is learning by itself through the data, massive amount of data, you know, how they're going to turn out. The machine is going to be really for human or not? That's another question that many philosophers have been engaged with. So I just want to make, that's pretty kind of broad criticism, but let's just put it in our life back, because it was a bit too much to probably consume. In our everyday life, there are so many things happen in our life, in your life, but the problem is everyone is going to post it, so it feels like everyone is so busy, and we feel quite tired. And sometimes I feel like I just want to plug it out and just be alone. But it's very quick to feel between, like, just you swing between being tired and also feeling quite isolated. And this fear to miss out is pretty bad. So that's our life. So going back to the question about transformation and then our perspective or our progress historical view behind technological development, it's probably a good moment for us to take a pause and think about it a little bit. Is it really true technological development has liberated human being, especially in recent year? I don't want to get rid of all the possibility, potential, and great possibility, so I'm just going to put it here, like saying, it's just complex. It's not one way or the other, but it's so messy and complex, the reality, what technology does to us, it's pretty difficult for us to fully comprehend, unless we really pick the little puzzle and piece and think about what is consequences of it. That's why I'm going to go back to later in the last part of my presentation, what it means for us as a teacher, educator, design student learning, and education activity. That's where we can probably find the answer a little bit. But for now, I want to pause here in terms of all this big criticism and move on to the topic that we're all having our heart on, which is distance education. And before talking about distance education, I want to share this slide. And many of you may or may not like kind of aware of it, but other speaker yesterday mentioned this too. So distance education is not created from vacuum. It has a long history. I'm pretty sure before 1858, there are other people sending letters to each other to help each other to learn. So it was probably longer than what we understand now. But if you have a like look into some of the very early incidents of what people are trying to do using the technological tool, which is letter or correspondence. And they actually had a very specific target group in their mind when the only distance educator tried to do. So I'm just going to read a couple of quotations on the slide. So first of all, like University of London was very, very clear. Their extension program is for women and racial minorities who are barred from higher education by political and personal circumstances. And very first female educator in US started a society for encouraging, society to encourage studies at home, and more than 7,000 women at that time signed up and get the education. They learn characters and how to write and how to talk to each other in written format. And we can go on, but the characteristics, if you read this other quotation, that all the distance educators had pretty specific goals and purpose in their mind, and distance education is not just anything, it's just really a political act that they really want to make society more equal and make education accessible to those people otherwise who wouldn't have the chance. They have used technology, so because technology has been developed since 1858. So new technology has been used from their standard back then. So you start with letter. When phone was invented and people start to be able to use phone, distance educators in the early history were so excited about it because they can talk to students now and explain things that students couldn't really understand through the written communication format. And television and radio that has been used. But I just wanted to draw your attention between the differences between two mediums of the technology. Okay, it seems like I can't go back. Oh yeah, thank you, sorry. So if you look at the early technological tools that distance educators have used, it's very one-on-one, they're very personalized. I mean, it's not like Zoom now we have. The telephone is something that tutor and student can talk, but it's a pretty personalized conversation. And we moved away from it, like mass media, like television, radio introduced, and now we have internet. It seems like everyone can do everything. So we were actually celebrating this possibility, the many-to-many conversation was possible and made it possible. So I just wanted to point out those little bit of different characteristics of two modes of communication here. And more recently, no one is going to argue against it, online learning has been flourishing. And because of COVID-19, it became something more normal and universalized. So universalized and normal is two key terms that I want to point it out here. And on the other hand, distance education, it kind of considered a little bit outdated. The term itself is a little bit, we're not really sure. A lot of people actually argue there is no distance anymore existing. So let's look into distance education and online learning together side by side, which I personally find it very, very useful. So if you look at distance and then online, so there are some different characteristics to what it means by distance and what it means by online. So I'll start from online, actually. So one of the things that when we talk about the internet, we always talk about it's accessible and open and even better because it's free. And it's pretty democratic. Anyone who is speaking English as second language still participate in the debate and conversation, either asynchronously or synchronously. There are a lot of good things going on about it. And generally, we believe somehow it's a very inclusive tool. And then when it comes to distance, it's opposite. Kind of it feels like physical distance between people are existing and psychological distance. You know, there has been decades of study about how to reduce psychological distance between people in social economic. But what I want to point out here is it's true we move from distance to online. However, some of the distance that we try to really resolve, I mean, not really probably we, but earlier distance educator before us, our generation, they try to remove physical distance and psychological distance and social economic, especially social and economic, it's very important here because those people who can't possibly get the higher education in person, distance education was only medium for them to be able to engage with the educational activities. So my question is, have we reduced? Is it really true we removed those distance? Do we really think that social distance among our students or between our student and our potential student or the student who will never be our student for some reason? Is a social economic distance between those groups? Can we just really argue that it has been closed? Because there are a lot of open education resources and practice. If they want to learn, they can learn. So can we argue it? So moving from distance to online, even in the linguistic and discursive and conceptual term, are we kind of free from blame? I'll just pause there a little bit. And I want to show you a couple of interesting, it's a quick kind of Google, and I'm pretty sure you can find a lot more interesting things. But I just want to read these things, and I just want to know how you feel about it. So it's like an online education and the developing word thing. So this little booklet is really arguing in the introduction. This is widely acknowledged that education plays a leading role in improving individuals and entire countries' quality of life. Maybe. Lacking access and financial resources, the developing world is an educational desert. Languishing in illiteracy and poverty, while the developed world is drinking deeply from the world of information and knowledge. And last paragraph is even particularly more interesting. So bridging the educational divide across the world is now easier than ever, thanks to the internet and online learning. Is it only me who feels like this is a little bit too simplistic? I mean, if internet can solve all this problem between developing country and developed country over 1,000 years, I mean, it can be pretty handy. Just one more kind of example here. So five ways that edutech is democratizing education. So there's 5 bullet points written by this author. Oh, thank you, that's helpful. So the first one, the best educators in the world are now available for free to everyone. Maybe students can easily access personalized assessment and feedback. And EdTech improves the quality of interaction, even with face-to-face teachers. Knowledge and information is available to all for free or at a low cost. Students can access community of experts. So that's how internet and online learning can democratize education. But we can ask question, all those years and decades and centuries that distance educators have tried to reduce the distance in the society, well, it has been pretty difficult because we are still living in the society that we have to admit that there are inequality existing. So only technology that we have in our hand can solve this issue in these multiple ways. Maybe that's a good thing. However, as many have observed, we had lockdown, and this COVID things actually made us realize what's going on in society, dark side of it. So we're very lucky. Thanks to internet, actually, we could do things almost as it is, you know, business as usual we were. But, you know, if you do look at the other side of the picture, it was not the case for all, right? So those people who can really leave and have the business as usual were a very particular part of the world. So we all saw it, which kind of made us pause and think about all this hypes created by a couple of examples that I shared. But I'm pretty sure that if you go and Google, you can find even more. So this is my thoughts about distance and online. I'm going to move to now education and learning. So distance education versus online learning. So we remove distance by online. And now we want to go for learning rather than education. And some of our colleagues seem to really think that education is really old-fashioned way to say, or it's pretty problematic. All right, so difference between education and learning for, you know, to this morning's sake of conversation. It's true, education is pretty institutionalized and programmed and designed activity. And somehow, learning, when we talk about it, we say it's very informal, individualistic, and pretty free from all this institutionalized power or authority. Education, it's like, often comes into conversation as a responsibility of society, or educational institution, or educator. On the other hand, learning comes down to responsibility of individuals. Who has more power, the society or individuals? Anyway, moving down the third bullet points, often educational outcome is described as the development of society, making something better in society. And learning is, as we know, lifelong learning and learner. It's all about individual competency and development of an individual. And education is often pretty teacher-directed, And learning is, of course, learning directed. So those two different terms, of course, it can be just language. Someone can just say, oh, that's just term. They're all the same in the practice. I agree. So in our daily life and daily everyday practice, actually what we call education and what we call learning, they may look the same. However, how we talk about it, how we phrase, and this language really matter. And the one thing that we can focus on is whose responsibility each of the practice is set and discussed. And that really asks important question to us. So I just went through some of the slides about COVID. So it's true that no one can argue right now against me saying that word is totally equal. Everyone has totally same quality of access to learning. It's not yet that, right? And somehow economical and social culture divide between people are even more serious than thousands of years ago, I would argue. So now we're just trying to say that it's learning important, not education. We're trying to say that learner should be a subject, not teacher. And that what does that mean? Everything when it comes to education, it comes down to individual accountability. And how are we gonna do about to those people who are not really in the position of doing anything in their life? Struggles are existing, but we're gonna just ignore it because it's learning resources are freely available at very low cost, and internet, everyone has it, so it's none of our business anymore. Students should figure out as self-directed learner. And on the other side, I don't want to go too deep in this argumentation, but the side of it is that now a lot of players who say they're specialized in online learning, they're actually the behind them driving force or motivation is not quite the same as only distance educators. And marketization, I mean, we know that, and our students are not the students that we think online learning will benefit them from all the inaccessibility in their life, rather than we tend to think them as important source of our income that makes us sustain. So that's something we can think about it as well. One thing I will have to say at this point is that it's not my intention to romanticize what have happened earlier. I think open universities, as we know, had a lot of struggles within themselves. So open university, I don't think that a lot of them really achieved the aim or stated aim. However, at least aim was clearly set, unlike some of the online learning educators or educational institutions right now. I'll repeat myself one more time. No matter what, in the social community, whether it's a small group of learners or big group or global society, it doesn't matter what the scale we are looking at. Any small societies, even between myself and one of you, there is always inequalities if we try to sit down and analyze it. Sorry, it was pretty pessimistic conversation. I just realized, are you okay? All right, I'll just give you 1 second and I can just drink water, but don't worry, we can talk about what we can do about it. So I'm not gonna finish it here. I still have 15 minutes, which is good. So this last part, this is not gonna be solution because I think no one has solution because problem is pretty massive in a way. However, we can think about what we can do as individual, and it's even better because we're here together as society and network and having similar heart. And I'm pretty sure, I have hope that some of you really get me this morning. So I want to talk about design. All of us, in one way or the other, our like major part of our daily practice is actually designing it. Sometimes our design is implicitly impact students' learning. Sometimes we actually design the course, then we actually dictate their course of action within our course. So I want to talk about purposive design. And humbly, I just want to share some of the example that I do in my classroom. It's not because it's really good example. It's not best example, if you like. So, however, I just want to show if some distance educators in this current digitalized education setting, if someone has all this problem, at least aware of this problem, and holding the original purpose of distance education, how the practice can be. So I hope that gives you some sense of what I'm trying to get out of it from today's conversation. So just one more time, transformation. So point is that it's bloody difficult thing to do. So I think we have to really ask questions like this before jumping into transforming anything. So first of all, what is the purpose of the transformation? What is direction of the change? All right, something should be improving. It's not enough. We need specific direction that what we want to do. And what and who is responsible for it? And what and who needs to be changed? So those are questions pretty basic. But I said really important that we have to talk more clearly. Sitting down here, I bet everyone has some idea, but we don't share our ideas. And then as a group, we talk about transformation, and everyone has different answer to those four questions. We can't transform anything as collective effort. So my teaching context, just briefly, to help you to understand some of the model that I have developed based on this teaching. So I teach on the program. This is distance education program for doctoral students. So if you look at read the bullet points, probably that's better and easier. So each year I teach 30 part-time distance doctoral students studying fully online. And they're all mid-career educational professionals working full-time. So some of you probably, can be very in the similar position as many of my students. And it's pretty international cohort from 10 plus countries. So when we think about all the quotation I showed, all those women and racial minorities, and on surface, pretty disadvantaged students that like earlier, this early distance education had tried to tackle. My students do not really look like it, actually. So my students look like very confident professional, and some of them are actually more experienced than myself too. So they don't really fit into the simple bracket of disadvantaged students or students from disadvantaged background at all. However, still, if you think about it in relative term, there are those people who wish they could do PhD full-time, but accessing PhD study full-time, as you may understand, it's a bloody expensive thing. So many of my students couldn't really afford that luxury of being a full-time PhD student in their age 40s or 50s. Or late 30s even. So in that way, I do see the value of my program is really helping them out to get the chance and engage with this designed activity as a PhD student without giving up their life. So this is a four-year program. So first part, as you can see, part one, year one and two, students do like four different modules. So each module is 6 months, and we taught them research methodology and different subject matter and debates, contemporary debates, Intel program, so on. And the last module, we help them to develop the proposal. And part two, year three and four, they do their study by themselves with the supervision of their supervisor. So in this setting, of course, it's pretty difficult to answer the epistemological questions like what knowledge my students should learn. So I can't really decide what I have to teach because all of them, as you can see, are coming from very international background. Their practice is engaged and involved in very different settings. So there is no set of knowledge that I can just teach them and they can learn. However, it's impossible given the condition that where they're coming from, what it really means for them to do the PhD as a part-time. Many of them are desperate. They really need degree to pursue their career, and it's not really a simple like leisure for them. By knowing that, we can ask questions like ontological question, what it really want us to do, what is worth feeling and thinking, experiencing for them during the course of course period. What kind of person do I want my student to be and become at the end of the course? So those more like a value-laden question can be asked. So I have worked on for a while now, published a few papers as well. So I've got to the point that, okay, I can probably transform, not society, but I can transform some of my students. Not that I really know better than them, but I have very strong purpose of what my education and their act should look like. So for me, the purpose of distance education, the ultimate purpose of distance education should be making meaningful changes in learners' perspectives and practice, thereby making change in society. Unfortunately, as a single educator within my module, which lasts for 6 months, it's impossible to change society. But only thing that I can do is I understand this disadvantaged nature of my student and support them, try to help them to be someone who I think it will be useful for them to be. So, you know, some of my rhetoric has problem. I'll unpack it later. And then what is the role of teachers and educators then? As I said, that I want to be directing it. So providing learners with opportunity to be exposed to new perspectives and change and challenge their own and plan different acts, and then that makes change in their actual daily situation. So aims shouldn't be. So aims of their participation, and if I want them to have cohort interaction, I don't want them to just exchange knowledge at all. I want them to argue and debate, think about all these problems in society in a meaningful way as a future or new researcher. And I do, some of my practice, as you can hear, I do utilize critical pedagogy as my background or my deep philosophy of teaching. So at the end of the day, if you remember the whole conversation I tried to get out today, I'm really unhappy, just like you, that how world is unequal right now. So having that in my mind, I vaguely hope that society can be more equal place in the future. And then what I can do under my little power within my classroom with this future researcher, I can actually work with them and increase critical awareness of all these social problems, often embedded in their life too. So some of the bullet points, what it really means in terms of some of the understanding we have of online learning. So first of all, I start with purpose rather than learning outcome in the epistemological knowledge sense. So design begins with strong sense of learning purpose and the outcomes. And then for me, as I repeat, individual perspective transformation and group practice transformation, which will lead to social change, not by myself, but hopefully by my students. That's what I do. The core outcome is learners' ontological development, becoming, if you like that term better, through interacting with me and with among themselves or with authors of the literature that I choose. So individual learners should have primary responsibility for their engagement with the course activities, because I can't do anything if they don't want to do anything. However, I really believe that teacher should determine the direction of student learning process and outcome, which I know many of you wouldn't really like it. So, however, I propose that teacher-directed distance education is only way within current circumstance we can make something meaningful out of our practice. So becoming critical citizens who are fully aware of social and educational inequality in the society and who are actively engaged with social changes and movements, and they become PhD, and they become supervising other students with same purpose. And again, on the surface, where my practice situated is not the same probably as how it was years ago. However, still distance education, in my view, is distance. My students have distance from society, distance from university, distance from their peers in their workplace who may have more or who are more privileged. And then that has been, or that has to be, my constant or endless battle throughout my practice and professional career to close the gap. And I don't believe that gap will be easily closed at all. But that's what we mean by distance educator. So just little two diagrams, and I'm done here, so don't worry, it's the last page. So how I see, I tried to kind of put some diagram in our paper to understand. I mean, it's pretty vague, although I tried to make it conversational, but how I see my teaching and what distance education should look like at this moment, it's pretty teacher-centered. I'm at the center. It's not because I'm egoist, but I think that teacher's role is very important. And then I do have my students, but as you can see, if you look at the small circles having alphabets in, that's probably individual, but they come with their own social background. So they bring their social community, which they may or may not aware of some of the problems within their society. And then the gray circle, just bigger than what teacher A is our course community that I try to work with them. In a lot of conversation in my module, it's about what's going on in their society. So my students, unfortunately, they walk into my module and they say, I just want to study the impact of iPad upon student math. And I, no, we are not going to do that. You study about your students later, probably another module. But in my module, you're going to study about yourself. You're going to talk about your community, what's going on in your community that you can do something. So if you look at the biggest gray circle, that's probably society or global society we're all part of, but which is outside of my reach or their reach even in terms of what they can do about it. But through this interaction that they would have in my module or in any courses of distance education, if they can make meaningful changes in themselves and their little community, as you can see, the middle-sized circle, in a way that is true, it's all connected one way or the other. And maybe we can hope there will be a bit of meaningful changes in the society, which I'm still not very sure whether I would call it as transformation. So last diagram is about this. So I hope what the proposed design for transformative distance education can do is that distance educator, no matter what we teach, we can really work with our students, and hopefully many of us are students coming with some needs that our direction can be really helpful, and the individual perspective can be changed. They can finally see and understand in society and inequality and problem of society in the deeper sense, and then they move on to their own community, you know, those middle circles just around them, and then can do something about it. And then let's hope that it's going to make the social perspective transformation. And of course, beyond my module, I don't think that I have power. I mean, none of us do what students do about it. But at least we can do, bring our purpose of teaching strongly in our module, in our education context. So the conclusion is that I really feel that distance education as a term has power. And we shouldn't really lose the original purpose of distance education, what we, our seniors, tried to do in the past. I think like mixing it up with all these things going on with digital education, which is nice, and online learning, which is nice. However, I think distance education is really special. And some people may think that what we are trying to do is a little bit outdated, old-fashioned, but it's okay. I think we should stay different and unique because we have our clear purpose, which may not be shared by a lot of online educators at the moment. And then if we try to do small steps, not the huge social transformation, like it sounds glossy and nice, but it's not easy. So if we can make differences within our distance education setting and hope that word can be changed in long term. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this very interesting and suggesting speech. Can I have a... Okay, now we have a few minutes for questions here in the room, and also you remember that you can use the app to ask something to our presenter today. I don't know, here at the room? Yes, please.
That's better.
No, but I think it's... Oh. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I should be in...
Yes.
I can't see.
Is that working?
I know the lights.
Sorry, okay. Is that working now?
Yeah.
Wow, that was brilliant, Kangmi. And I don't know where to start because it's so thought-provoking. And you've given us so much to think about. But I want to come back to your critique of the discourses of transformation, because I could not agree more. And I get very concerned about this work. I know it's in the title of the conference, so sorry if I'm being a bit critical here, but I think I would even go further, you know? I don't even know, I would really want to question whether we should even use that word at all. But I mean, I'd like to hear more about that. Well, I think what you've suggested at the end is, you know, a more realistic vision and set of practices that you engage in. But I think your question at the beginning is an excellent one. What is the actual problem that we're seeking to transform? Is transformation even the right ideologically the right term that we should be using? I don't know. If
you've got thank you. I'm totally with you. So that's why I. All right. So the social transformation, I'd really try not to use. But. So that's why I try to go through what can be our purpose. So as a distance educator, our purpose will be really focused in terms of making society a little bit better place in terms of the equality and serving our students who may be less advantaged than other people, less privileged than other people. I think that's what only thing that we can do. So that's definitely not transformation of society. I don't think that that's even possible. However, I tend to use the transformative learning theory heavily. I mean, critical pedagogy is one way. And if you read those, as you know, actually there is a possibility for individual being able to transform because a lot of things they are not aware of. So my doctoral students are lovely human beings. However, they're not necessarily aware of some of the problems in their own classroom. And then actually once they kind of realize that their students are not all equally well positioned, and that's actually really transformative in terms of their perspective. Once they cross the river, they can't come back. So that I will call that, I will be happy to use transformation for that sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a question from the audience here in the two questions at this moment. You talk in your speech about these self-regulate and responsible learners. And someone asked where we can get those self-regulate and responsible learners, where we can get.
Yeah, so thank you so much for that question. I'm happy to reiterate my thesis here. I don't think the students are self-regulated and responsible. That's not, I really think that that's wrong assumption that we start with our practice. Students can be, if we engage them in a meaningful way. So we can't just expect them to have some static characteristics of self-regulating. We can't expect them to have some skills to regulate. They may or may not, but I think everyone has it if they really want. So my point here is that it should be teacher-directed learning, teacher-directed education. If teacher has clear purpose and try to make changes in their student perspective and design it purposively and carefully, student will engage, and they will do. And if they really think that it's meaningful, they do have skills and everything. My students are all full-time and then having two children in their house, and then during the pandemic, everything, you can just name all the difficulties, that the reasons why they can't engage with learning, but they do. So that's why I try to really move away from this idea of learning and move back to education, that responsibility should be on society and educator and educational institution, not on students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know if someone here in the room, another question here? No, I have another one from the here on the in the app. What role does social presence or building learning communities play in your transformational distance education model?
Mm. Oh, that's a really good question. Thank you for that. If I can move this. So there's two things I want to say. I mean, I know social presence in the community is very important, but I think we have to admit the limitation in two different ways. So first of all, we should appreciate that all our students as historical being, they have developed their community already outside. So for me, it's too mechanical for us to try to ask them to be community suddenly from day one when we walk into the program and say that you guys are like 30 of us, like be friends and share everything among yourself. It doesn't really work like that. So I appreciate social presence is important in the classroom, in the online classroom or distance education setting. However, for me, it's a little bit forceful if we really create the community, and then it's really not possible. So that's first point. And having said that, second point is we have to utilize what they already have. That's why in my little diagram, so this middle circle, that's really, I really can see this. And every single person, because at least in my setting and many other distance education setting where distance learners are already professionals and having their life and long established professional life, they actually have very strong community within their school and university and corporate setting whenever that you can, they're coming from. And then for me, so our design should go beyond what we can see. So my effort to create community and foster some changes behind individual, I think I see this. So that's why I try to kind of conceptualize by drawing this diagram. So for me, I really want them to develop some social presence, not only within my classroom, but outside the classroom in their community. So I wrote the paper called like Beyond the Boundaries, Beyond the Screen of the Moodle. So that's what I try to do. And having said that, the last point is, I think I would really try to put teacher presence as a top, then social presence. I really think that if teacher presence is there and students feel like they're cared, actually social presence among themselves is somehow miraculously, automatically actually developed. But we can't just expect them to have social presence when we are not ready to spend our effort and time to be present with them there. Thank you for that question.
Okay, we have another one related to the assessment.
Yes, sure.
How does assessment change in your approach compared with to traditional tests and essays?
Yeah, okay, that's a really good question, and I actually do not want to open that conversation because, yeah, I really feel my argumentation is strong. As soon as the assessment hits, it's like it's really difficult because I appreciate that I'm so privileged in terms of my teaching. Because I'm teaching at the program, the PhD level program, and assessment is really, I spend like a lot of hours to read 30 project report the student submitted, and it's very qualitative, and I would say very emotional as well, because I engage in their process of research and research outcome. So for me, assessment should be very social practice and emotional practice. However, I don't want to dismiss the difficulties that our colleagues and some of you may have here in terms of traditionally that we have to measure the knowledge acquisition of students. So that kind of assessment is pretty difficult in terms of incorporating the same way that I do. However, I have to really say that we can't avoid it because at especially foundation level, knowledge acquisition is important only because my students, PhD students, have the accumulated knowledge from their earlier education. Now they can be actually engaged in transformative learning. So I know that I'm not answering the question really well, but I think because that's why where the purpose design should come in. So we can't just design purposively in terms of learning activities. We have to engage with how assessment should be purposely designed. So I know that there is limitation, there are some constraints, and we are all working for the university, has institutional regulation and rules, so we can't really get rid of it all. However, we can still, it's really important for us to engage meaningfully and think and put the thoughtful reflection upon how we're going to assess students, or even within the assessment setting, how we're going to treat students. Are you going to treat students as potential cheater, so that if we don't have put the technology to monitor them, they're going to come look into textbooks, so on. I know I'm going too far, but there are a lot we can think about in terms of our attitude toward the assessment. Some of the practical issues we may not be able to address immediately, but I'm pretty sure that if we think and engage with this purposive political conversation on different aspects of learning and teaching, we may find better way to move forward. But yeah, answer is a bit open, so I know.
Thank you very much, Professor Lee. Thank you very much. We don't have more time for more questions. We have to continue with the parallel sessions. I really find your proposal very, very interesting, in particular this transformative model. I like it a lot. And congratulations, and we have to continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.